Hi there, I'm Tom Schultz, host of Voices of Montana, an issue-oriented newsmaker radio program. It's heard weekdays on 19 radio stations with 28 signals all across our great treasure state. Thank you for clicking on the podcast. Please subscribe, and we'll do our best to keep you connected. We're also on Facebook and on the web at voicesofmontana.com, where I'd love to hear from you. Please contact me at tom@voicesofmontana.com.
You know, I think when we talk about crime and fighting crime, there's a lot that we know instinctively, right up front, how tough that job is. But I think there's also much more that we don't know about fighting crime, the little things. There's going to be a couple of cases we'll talk about today that are important in those little areas of fighting crime. And we have Montana's excellent Attorney General, Austin Knutson, in studio today to talk about this William Trevor case. William Trevor case is actually... is his name. The case is before the Supreme Court, the Montana Supreme Court. We'll talk more about that here in just a little bit. Austin Knutson today on Voices of Montana. Let's just go right into it. Over to my right here, Montana Attorney General Austin Knutson. Sir?
Good morning.
How you doing?
I'm finer than frogs here. Great to be here.
Nice. You're out and about, right? In Montana. What are people telling you? When Montana's Attorney General goes out and goes to these events, you know, there's generally a theme to them too, but you're accessible. And so people will come up and say, Austin, I liked this. Austin, I didn't like that. That's for me, that's kind of exciting, right?
It really is one of the great things about Montana is that we're all just people, you know. Yeah. I tell people, yeah, I'm the Attorney General. That and $25 will get me on a Greyhound bus out of town. it really is the great thing about the state. Like, it's not a big thing. Nobody really cares, including me. You know, we just, if you got something to tell me or you want to visit, let's talk.
Yeah.
But people are talking a lot about crime and drugs still. That's not the fun stuff, right? Now, there's good news there. Our fentanyl seizures are way down for the year after a couple of just crazy, wild record years. Amazing. When you secure the southern border, the cartels can't get as much of their product in the country.
It's wild. Yeah.
Yeah.
I so much appreciate that too, because that is effective. And if you look at Montana's numbers, you know, violent crime had risen over a number of years, but even that is ticking down.
It is.
In the past couple of years.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I hate to say, you know, it looks like a hockey stick, but it really does. I mean, since about 2013, violent crime in Montana was on a pretty steep increase, and it increased every year right along with our drug problem. I'm really happy with the fact that, I don't like to pat myself on the back. I'll pat my people on the back, law enforcement, prosecutors. Since I've been in office, violent crime in Montana has trended back down. Now, it's still high, right?
Yeah.
But we're back down to where we were about 2017, 2018. It keeps trending down. That's a good thing.
I appreciate that. And I appreciate your staff too, because every time we encounter them in our jobs here, they're fully qualified. They're fully informed. They're fully engaged too. And so, you know, kudos to them.
I'm very lucky. I have amazing staff. Yeah.
Well, yeah. And you kind of have, but you know, you got to have good leadership to have a good staff too. So thank you for what you do. I appreciate that.
Blind hogs find a truffle once in a while.
let's go back to a case that, you lead actually 26 states in this coalition against an unconstitutional Hawaiian firearm carry ban, which there was news today that the Supreme Court is going to hear this
case. This is huge. Yeah. So my office, we got involved in this case very, very early. So this was a situation where the state of Hawaii, despite several U.S. Supreme Court cases that have now clearly stated, no, there is a Second Amendment. We do recognize that it exists, and that people have a fundamental right to defend themselves and to carry a firearm. Well, Hawaii just basically, you know, flies the bird and says, well, you know what? We don't care. Well, this is Hawaii. They literally said, well, because of the spirit of aloha, that gives us legal rationale to restrict the carrying of firearms. And it's just like... spirit of aloha? I think I must have missed that in the U.S. Constitution.
Right, yeah. I was looking for that one, too. Yeah.
Yeah. But that, I mean, I, and I'm not making that up. That literally is what was one of their arguments. So, yeah, why do we care, right? Who gives a rip
why
about?
Why is this important?
Right, why is this important? Well, because this came out of the Ninth Circuit, which Montana is in. We are in the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, just like California, just like Hawaii. That's why you see me get so involved in many of these cases, and especially the Second Amendment stuff. I know you know this, Tom, but I mean, I am a I am a pretty prolific gun guy. It's my hobby. I reload, I shoot, I gunsmith, I competitive shoot, I hunt. So when these kinds of cases come up, I didn't intend for this to happen, but mm-hmm. I've kind of become the nation's go-to gun guy. So this was a really easy one for us to jump in. We led the amicus argument, asking the U.S. Supreme Court, like, hey, you got to fix this. Because the Ninth Circuit, they get it wrong a lot. Extremely liberal circuit. I mean, again, it's got Hawaii and California in it. It's got a bunch of wild-eyed liberals on the court.
Yeah.
And they do everything they can to find ways around the Second Amendment. I mean, they're just notorious for it.
Anybody who's had a history of understanding courts knows this.
Yes, absolutely.
You know, and maybe you have to re-educate people, but over the years, and we're talking year after year after year, there's one in a million that I think they might get right. In my mind.
And to their credit, there's a couple of new justices on that bench, including one from Montana. Right. I mean, Justice Van Dyke. Yep. He used to work for the Montana Department of Justice. He was the Solicitor General. He's great. He is so outnumbered on that court, it's not even funny.
Yeah.
So this is an exciting case. The U.S. Supreme Court just this morning put out a statement that they are going to accept this case. I am very confident that they're going to slap down the Ninth Circuit, and they're going to tell Hawaii, like, no, people actually can own guns even on your island. Sorry.
Montana Attorney General Austin Knutson with us here in studio. We'll open up phones here in a little bit, too. I'm going to kind of go back into this case just a little bit about how important it is to defend these gun rights. Because we see, especially in today's atmosphere, I want you to address that, okay? Because we need to talk about political violence. We need to talk about the threats against public office holders. Government shutdown is one thing. We'll get onto that too. But it's a critical environment, I think, to stand up for these basic rights. But it's not an easy chore, I think, in today's environment.
You know, it kind of is easy for me. Yeah. Like I figure I didn't get elected to sit in hell and put my feet on a desk. You know, these are the kind of cases that we like to bring. We like to be very, very active and forward leaning on these cases. You're right. It's a dangerous time right now. But I come back to like the big tenet. Gun control doesn't work. Look at the places that have done it. Washington, D.C., highest murder rate in the country. Chicago, one of the highest murder rates in the country. Like literally those two fight. Hawaii's got a very, very high violent crime rate because they've restricted concealed carry. They've restricted people's rights to defend themselves. So where do you see the lowest crime rates in the country? States that allow pretty liberal, and I hesitate to use that term, but it's the right term, they allow pretty liberal concealed carry. Like bad guys know, huh? I don't have an unarmed populace I can just victimize. It's weird.
And I think that's catching on, though. I mean, not just that fact, but other aspects of our society where we're going, well, you know, the conventional wisdom was this, or the, you know, the agendized wisdom is this. I think there's a lot of people recognizing a drift from law and order. And not just people at the grassroots level, but hopefully people at the national level. You know, what's your sense of that? What's your sense of where the courts and the legislature and the administration will take our gun rights?
Well, I mean, so first of all, the U.S. Supreme Court right now is for a gun person. The U.S. Supreme Court has been fantastic. In the last 7 years, they've handed down a series of cases that have been really, really positive. And probably the best one is the Bruin case, right? Like you have to understand for almost 200 years, the U.S. Supreme Court has actively avoided the Second Amendment. We don't want to talk about it. We don't want to try to define it. We don't want to have cases about it. Let's just hide and hope it goes away.
Interesting to think of that.
It really has. I mean, any constitutional scholar will tell you that. And it's only been really, you know, the McDonald case, the Heller case, and then finally the Bruin case just a couple of years ago where the court literally finally had to say, like, no, you have a Second Amendment right to carry a firearm. Now, that sounds really simple to us Montanans that do it every day, but you have to understand, like, the Supreme Court has never, ever said that before. And now they're openly recognizing it. So that's why I'm excited about this case. I think court-wise, we're in a great spot with the U.S. Supreme Court. Great administration right now. Donald Trump's, both of his boys are big shooters and big Second Amendment guys. I think they're moving in a great direction. They still haven't quite abolished the ATF like a lot of us would like, but they've certainly overhauled it. I think the challenge, just like always, is the National Congress.
Yeah.
I mean, that's where a lot of the stuff gets hung up, always.
It's interesting to think, you know, that there was even the consideration that we could do away with the ATF. You know, and even the consideration now that perhaps the Department of Education, you know, just as another example, is not working for us. I think that's a shift, and I hope it's you know, a very solid shift in a lot of ways, because I just see a lot of things off track. What will this case do? I mean, it, what you're trying to avoid, I presume, this Hawaii case is to set precedent in the wrong direction.
Well,
right?
So here's why this case matters. So the in the Bruin case, which is the U.S. Supreme Court, basically the court said you have to have, like, for any kind of gun control measure to pass constitutional muster, there has to be basically a historic precedent for it. And the only instances the U.S. Supreme Court has said voting places and government buildings, some government buildings. Like, that goes clear back to the start of the founding of the country. Those were two areas where they allowed some gun control. And basically, the Bruin court said, that's it. Well, what Hawaii has done is said, well, yeah, okay. And again, this comes back to their stupid argument about the spirit of aloha, that somehow in their history, we've never allowed weapons. And so therefore, you can't carry in parks. You can't have a gun in your home. And I, like, it was just crazy. They got this whole list of quote unquote sensitive places where you can't have a firearm, and like that's not constitutional at all.
Right. How do you adjudicate spirit of aloha?
Right.
You know, yeah. Fifth generation Montanan, he's got more bobcat blood than he does grizz blood in it, but he attended both universities and comes from northeastern Montana, the Culbertson area. Bainville, actually, is the hometown.
Correct.
11. I know those places.
Many do.
Yep. I've driven through and by and stopped in a time or two as well for the friendly service that you'll see in some of those towns.
Absolutely. Yeah. We were just up there. It was great. Great to be home.
Yeah, it is. You know, and how? And thanks for coming in again. I appreciate that.
Glad to do it.
You know, what's your schedule like? It seems like there are a lot of things that you're involved in. You got a nice staff. I think, what was it, 700 to 800 employees?
Yeah, we're about 800 statewide. Yeah.
How is the managing of the Department of Justice for you?
You know, it comes back to what I said. It took about a year and a half for us to kind of get our arms around everything and figure out, you know, where all the bathrooms were and who all the players were. But it's going really well. I'm very, very blessed to have a bunch of really good administrators. You know, Lori Bakery that runs the motor vehicle division. My heavens, she has completely culturally changed that place. That used to be, you know, no one liked going to MVD.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, it was the cliche,
the butt of a joke.
It was that bad. Like when we showed up, I was traveling around. People are talking about crime. I'm talking about drugs. And literally everywhere I went, people in Montana were like, yeah, that's true. But man, I was in line at the MVD for like 6 hours yesterday. Can you do something about that? She has.
Yeah. Nice.
Credit where it's due. Lori Bakery is an amazing administrator and just has completely turned the morale on that place around. People are happy. Literally one of the highest satisfaction jobs in state government now. And this is
really
this
Department of Justice.
Absolutely.
Nice.
Absolutely. Yeah. The motor vehicle division specifically.
Yeah.
Like, wow. And it credit goes to her and her staff.
What did she do?
Well, we had a lot of we had just an absolutely dinosaur computer program that was running everything in MVD.
Okay.
It was a DOS based program, Tom.
Really?
And the state built it, you know, because that's what states do well. State government builds computer systems, apparently.
DOS, I think, was popular in 98.
Yeah.
Maybe before that, yeah.
But, I mean, that's why you had long wait times, because it was this monstrosity of a system that would crash daily. And it wouldn't just crash in your local station. It would crash statewide.
Oh, wow.
So yeah. you had 30 people that showed up in line at the MVD station in Billings or, you know, wherever. And suddenly the staff had to come out and be like, sorry, the system crashed. Can you schedule a new appointment? And then it was COVID, which was even worse. We were scheduled out for 6 months. It was just awful. And that creates bad morale. I mean, no one likes getting chewed out by the customers.
Yep.
you know?
So do people come up and go, now, hey, Austin, thanks for fixing the DMV.
Absolutely.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, no,
oh,
it's such a breath of fresh. So yeah. My dad is probably the harshest critic I've ever had, right? Like when something's wrong, he's going to tell me. And so he went to get his driver's license renewed, and he was dreading it. And he told me, like, this is going to be awful. And I said, Dad, just go to the MVD station. I said, it'll take probably 15 minutes. He didn't believe me. He came back, walked into my house, and he says, I've been doing this for 50 years. Best experience I've ever had. Oh, nice. He said I was done in 10.
Wow. He didn't have to drop your name either, did he?
No, yeah. He didn't. He didn't. No, it was great. But I hear that everywhere. Like, it's just so much better.
And that's a good little story that you know, we're not aware of. You think about fighting crime, and it's drugs, and it's the bad guys, yeah. And it's illegal immigration. But those
everybody has to go to MVD.
Yeah.
I mean, you just think about it from you know, retail government. No one likes to deal with the government. But in Montana, you're pretty much going to have to go to Motor Vehicle Division at some point in your life. So, yeah, that's been a really fun one.
Oh, I'm glad. And thanks for shouting out those names, too. I mean,
absolutely. Laura deserves it. She's awesome.
A lot of people are putting in their time as public servants, you know, and doing it for the right reasons.
Yeah.
So, thank you, Lori, for that. Let's move to this William Trevor case. It's a search and seizure case. I'll let you go ahead and lay down the foundation.
Yeah, so this is a really interesting case. So we're actually going to the U.S. Supreme Court. My office, myself and my Solicitor General, Christian Corrigan, we're going to D.C. in about 2 weeks, and we're going to argue in front of the U.S. Supreme Court, which is pretty cool. Not yeah. something that you get to do every day.
Yeah.
They took a case that came out of the Montana Supreme Court. So here's what happened. We had an individual who was over in Anaconda, and cops get called because we hear he's suicidal. He's in the house. He's got a gun. He's suicidal. He's been saying things like, we're worried about him. Cops get called. Okay. Anaconda, they're a city county police. They show up. And credit to them. They didn't just run in, you know, kick the door down. This was not heavy-handed policing. They did a lot of due diligence, a lot of investigation before they determined, hey, this guy's a danger to himself, possibly others. We really got to go in. We don't have time to go get a warrant. We got to go in. That's allowed under the U.S. Constitution. Okay, they go in the house, searching for the guy, trying to find him, want to help him. He jumps out of the closet and levels a pistol at the cops. Generally not a great idea.
Then your training kicks in.
Play stupid games, yep. Win stupid prizes. Yep. Well, he got a stupid prize. Yep. I mean, he got himself shot. He survived, recovered, and he was charged. He was charged with assault on a police officer, because that's what that is. When you point a gun at someone, that's assault.
Convicted too, right?
He was convicted.
Yes.
That conviction, he appealed it. He appealed it to the Montana Supreme Court, saying, they shouldn't have been in my house. They should have gotten a search warrant to come in first. Our argument was there were exigent circumstances. And that's a thing. That's yes, not a is. New argument, yeah. Right? That's been upheld by the U.S. Supreme Court. He has now appealed that all the way to the U.S. Supreme Court. They granted cert. They're going to hear this case. So, I mean, it's nice to actually be going to D.C. in front of the U.S. Supreme Court. And we're defending law enforcement, because they really did do a good job here. That this was not heavy-handed policing. I'd be the first one to call that out.
Yep.
This wasn't it.
Underlying this, too, is something I think that's real important to law enforcement overall, and that's the search and seizure rules, because they're pretty solid over the years. And
especially so in Montana.
Like, yeah,
our search and seizure laws under the Montana Constitution are even tougher than the Fourth Amendment of the U.S. Constitution.
Wow.
So you really got to be careful here in Montana as law enforcement.
And they were. I mean, that's good training.
Absolutely.
At that time. So maybe unpack that a little bit. What would happen if you if this case does go in the wrong way and they say you have to have a seizure, or a warrant, I should say, even in every kind of circumstance? I think that's what you're trying to avoid.
Right. Well, yeah. I mean, just practically in Montana, that becomes a problem, right? Like, I'm from northeastern Montana, right? And I prosecuted. Like, I've written a lot of search warrants.
Roosevelt County.
I've had to go find my judge to get those signed, right? The yep. judges aren't always just sitting in their chambers with their feet on the desk waiting for you to come in. It could be the middle of the night. I mean, the judge I had, he was a farmer. You know, and good for him.
Yeah.
But a lot of times he was out in the field, you know, up around Scobie, and didn't have a lot of cell phone service that I could just find him. So, I mean, that's the kind of realities that we have in the state. Now, am I saying somehow that excuses not getting a warrant? No, absolutely not. I very much believe in the Fourth Amendment. Government cannot be heavy-handed. They cannot enter your home, generally speaking, without a warrant. I believe in that to my heart. But this was a situation where we had a dangerous individual. We knew he was armed. We confirmed that. There were witnesses. Danger to himself, but I mean, more importantly to me, he was possibly a danger to others.
Yeah, and there's language in here that I think people have to, well, the judges, the court will have to kind of look at and determine, you know, the value of some of that language. Where do you think this? It seems to me like it's kind of a little cut and dried, or there's been a lot established here. So, what's the risk? What is he arguing that has merit?
Well, look, I generally speaking, I think there's merit to the argument that law enforcement should have a warrant before they can enter your home.
Okay.
I don't begrudge him that argument at all. I think this one can lead to a ridiculous result if he's allowed to get off of his conviction and have this stand. This is going to lead to a bad result here in Montana if we have to run and go find a judge and get a warrant in every circumstance, because sometimes emergencies are happening and we're not able to, like, we don't have time to get a warrant.
Yeah.
If there's children at danger, if there's other victims could be victimized, there are times where you, unfortunately, we got to send the cops in.
You have to use your judgment. Absolutely. In those circumstances.
And these guys did. Like, yes. I really want to emphasize that. Yeah. In this particular case, Anaconda cops did a great job. Great job. And that's what makes this one so easy for us to defend.
And I want to talk, and I got 2 minutes left here, but I want to talk how this leads to higher morale, hopefully, for our law enforcement officers. Because if they're looking at the mainstream misleadia, they're getting the wrong message about how we feel about our law enforcement.
Yeah, well, it's something I say to every graduating class at the Montana Law Enforcement Academy, which is, I have your back as the Attorney General. Well, this is one where I mean it. Like, that this was cops doing a great job protecting their community, doing the right stuff, checking all the boxes, and here they're getting pilloried for it. So this is me doing my job now and having their back all the way to the U.S. Supreme Court.
You've been there before, haven't you?
I never have.
Oh, no. Okay. No. I know the state has. So,
oh, yeah.
And you're going there for the first time.
I will be going for the first time, yes.
That building is intimidating. You walk up those steps and those colonnades. And
oh,
you
know, man. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
How do you – what's that going to be
first,
like?
I'm sweating bullets. Absolutely sweating. But look, I mean, I'm not going to be the guy doing the heavy lifting. I mean, to be fair, again, credit where it's due. My Solicitor General, Montana Solicitor General Christian Corrigan, an absolute constitutional rock star. Gotcha. He's going to be doing the heavy lifting here. He's the one really sweating. I'm just going to go and, you know, throw popcorn at him or something.
Yeah, right? Yeah. Well, that's what Montanans do. Okay, what are you, nervous about this? Ha ha. You know, yeah. Some kind of wisecrack.
I'm sure Justice Gorsuch is going to be fine.
Well, I'm looking forward to that. When is that? Is that date set? Or
The 15th of October.
Okay, October 15th.
Yeah.
Verbal arguments here? Oral arguments?
Yep, oral arguments. Okay. There's no cameras in the courtroom.
Okay.
I think they do live stream audio.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, good.
Yep.
Good. We'll get that. Yeah.
Awesome.
Thank you for doing that. I appreciate that. Austin Knutson, Montana's Attorney General in studio. I'm glad to have you along as well. It's a Friday. Really glad we've made it this far. Austin, our 25th, is that right? 25th Attorney General serving
right.
Since 2021. We talked about your roots as well. We talked a little bit too. You've been in the Montana legislature, elected as the then, I think, youngest Speaker of the House.
That's what they tell me. I don't know.
Yeah. Might have a younger one. We don't know. Or you and Matt Regeer.
Matt and I are the same age.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah.
So it comes down to days then.
Well, he was a speaker later in his life, so I got him.
I see. I got you. All right. I appreciate that. And I appreciate you coming in, too. There's so many things as we look at today's world that cross your paths. You know, even education is something that you're looking at when big tech. There's a couple of things that I want to get on here, and it has to do with political violence. We're seeing, and I've got some stats here, and I think people, I don't need to give them stats. I think they're understanding that there's more pressure. There's more anger and angst. For a lot of reasons, there are groups out there that are pulling that back, and I'm hoping they're going to be effective in a lot of ways too. Does that change law enforcement? How do you prepare for a political event with today's circumstances.
Well, I mean, well, obviously what happened with Charlie Kirk was horrifying.
Yeah.
And I don't think anyone can deny that we are seeing an uptick in violence from the radical left. A lot of people don't like saying that. I got no problem saying it because I think it's true. Now, thankfully, this is still Montana. But, you know, I think Utah said the same thing before that event. You know, nothing like that would probably ever happen in Utah, and it happened. God willing, it won't happen here. We do, I don't want to give away the farm here, but we certainly, Montana, we do a very good job. The Highway Patrol has got a pretty heavy presence whenever we have any kind of, not just political event.
Right, right.
I mean, big football games, yep. Big concerts, sporting events. I mean.
Good point.
If you've ever been to Washington Grizzly Stadium or to the Bobcat Stadium, you look up on the top of the stadium, that's Highway Patrol overwatch.
They're got, down on the floor too.
They absolutely are. Yeah. So, and it's not just Highway Patrol. I mean, you got local sheriffs, PDs. They're all there. So, but you know, look, I don't have an army. You know, there's about 230 troopers statewide. And, you know, any given time, half of them are on shift and half of them aren't. Yeah. So it's not like we've got a ton of presence. You know, the Montana Capitol is still wide open. There's very little security. The Highway Patrol provides security. But, I mean, there's no metal detectors. There's no scanners. You just and I like it that way.
Yeah. Montanans do, too.
People can walk in, have access to their legislator. You know, it's not like the Congress in D.C. where you can't even get close to the building. They got it. Nancy Pelosi had it walled off last time I was there. I was horrified. Like, you literally couldn't get in the Capitol.
That's not citizen government.
That's absolutely not. That's elitism.
Yeah. And I think Montanans want that preserved here.
Absolutely.
Too, you know, but it's getting tougher in some ways. And so it's up to us Montanans to not be irresponsible at those events and things like
well,
that.
Well, it's not just those events. I mean, candidly, we have a lot of people that show up in Helena. I mean, that people come to my office, you know, they're not always in the right state of mind. They are convinced that I did something or more often they're convinced I can do something. You know, very often somebody got a judgment from a judge in the state they don't like and they're angry and they're going to come to Helena and talk to the AG because he's going to fix this. I got no authority over any judge in the state. Nothing I can do for you, right? But there's just people think I can pardon people from prison. They show up. It doesn't happen often, but it does happen.
What does law enforcement have to do? I mean, do you think you need more presence? Do you have to reevaluate your scope or what next steps do you think law enforcement will do to effectively address this as it's becoming a bit of a problem?
Well, I mean, I definitely think we have to reevaluate our training and our methodology, right? If you look at the Charlie Kirk situation and what happened there, and I'll go further. I'll go back to when the attempted assassination of President Trump. What did that look like? Well, you had security close, right? You got body people all around the president, and you had body people all around Charlie Kirk. Nobody checked the buildings.
That is a mistake.
And this guy just grabbed a hunting rifle. Like, you know, that's a huge tactical mistake. And that's the takeaway that a lot of the really tactically minded law enforcement that do this type of work, that's the stuff that they're seeing and going, oh my God, that's what we got to do a better job at. Distance security, high point security. And by high point, I mean, literally the tops of buildings, elevation, you know, that stuff's got to get locked down.
And it's and there's a process that I think the whole country will kind of go through to evaluate some of those methods and things and again it really has to do with us turning down the temperature of just debate for that matter because we're a civil government.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I've got we'll take a break because we're at this time. What is it? 9:45? No, we won't. We'll keep going. Then I'm going to switch gears. To 708.
Yeah.
This is a new, it's a legal additive or a drug, I guess.
It's not new. What's new is what it's being synthesized into. Okay. So what we're talking about, kratom. Kratom is a natural plant. It grows in Southeast Asia. It's been used for millennia as a low level medicinal. Like they brew it in a tea. Drink it. It's got a very mild calming effect. Well, that's because it has very low levels of a chemical called 7-OH. 7-OH is an opiate. I mean, it literally is the same molecule that you'll find in morphine, in oxycodone, hydrocodone, all of the prescription painkillers. It's the same ingredient in fentanyl. You and I talked about fentanyl a ton.
Yeah.
Kratom responds to Narcan. Like, that tells you right there.
Okay.
So the difference is it's very, very, very low level. I'm not worried about that, right? Because there are products out there, and that's not what we're talking about. Kratom is completely unregulated.
Yeah.
And the chemical 7-OH is completely unregulated at the state and the federal level. What we're seeing, and it's really taken off here in Montana, we're seeing synthesized 7-OH products. So not the natural plant. They figured out how to formulate this stuff and concentrate it. Mm-hmm. Some of these products in Montana are like 20 or 30 times more powerful than morphine. And you can walk into a convenience store and buy it over the shelf. Kids can walk in and buy it. This is the concern. It's just as addictive as if you got hooked on prescription painkillers. And we're just allowing it to be sold. No instructions. Here's how to take it. Here's how much you should take. Here's how powerful this is. None of that is required to be on any of the packaging. So it's kind of the Wild West. The Food and Drug Administration is looking at it at the federal level. I think they're very likely to schedule it and start regulating it federally. But it's still not on any of our drug schedules statewide. So I think this is going to take some legislative action.
And thank you for that. I mean, and this has been one of your main themes here as well, as you have been Attorney General, is this battle against drugs and illicit drugs, and this is an offshoot of that. And you looked at we talked a lot about fentanyl. Those number of that percentage of seizures was just skyrocketed. Was it 100 over 1,000%?
No, it was 20,000%.
20,000% increase.
Yes.
Okay. I thought it was 11,000. It's hard to put that number into perspective.
It's staggering.
Yeah.
Absolutely staggering. Yeah. Fentanyl. So the number is from 2019 to 2023, our state of Montana law enforcement fentanyl seizures went from basically zero. We didn't ever see this stuff back in 2019 when I was a county attorney, to now just fast forward 2023, 20,000% increase.
Jeez.
Didn't just meet meth. It surpassed methamphetamine. So that's the bad news. The good news is this year, those numbers are trending way down.
Way down.
Way down.
Yes.
Yeah. Fentanyl, it's amazing. You close the front door and secure the southern border, and suddenly the drug numbers drop. Weird.
I hope people can, do you have to say that again? Do we have to, it's pretty 1 + 1 = 2 there, isn't
President
it?
Trump securing the southern border and actually enforcing federal immigration law is helping the drug problem in Montana.
And you're the one who can attest to how widespread that drug problem is when it comes to crime. I think 80 to, it's probably more than that, but the percentage of crimes that relate back to drug addiction.
Oh, absolutely.
Very high.
Especially when you're talking about methamphetamine. I mean, people who are addicted to methamphetamine, people who are on methamphetamine do unpredictable, wild, dangerous things. I mean, we just had a shooting up in Wolf Point on the reservation. Now, unfortunately, that was tribal members, tribal victims on the reservation. State of Montana, we have zero jurisdiction over that ever.
Yeah.
But that's my home county. I know the story. I know what went on there. This individual was probably very, very high on methamphetamine at the time. Mm-hmm. And there's no justification for what he did. I know there's a lot of chitty chat out there on Facebook that somehow this was justified. It wasn't. Mm-hmm. He got the wrong people. Mm-hmm. And even if it was the right people, that doesn't justify what he did. Mm-hmm. But that's what happens on methamphetamine. Like that, this is just not long division.
And you're right. And again, it's that simple format that we can understand. This is the problem that are causing all these other problems. Let's focus here. And there's been a concentrated effort to do that. How much more effort is needed?
Well, it's still a small state. I mean, again, we don't have a ton of law enforcement. Mm-hmm. You know, I think people have the mistaken identity that I just have this army of cops and this army of narcotics officers. And I don't. We've got about 230 troopers on the Montana Highway Patrol. They're limited jurisdiction. All they can do is highway work. Now, they do a great job of drug interdiction. They take a lot of drugs off the highways because most of the drugs that come into Montana come in on the highways. Then you got the State Division of Criminal Investigation. I've only got about 14 narcotics officers. I mean, that's all the legislature has given me. You know, I work with the money that the legislature gives me. I don't have a pot of money. I can just go hire people.
But they've been responsive. They've been somewhat responsive to some of your needs, too.
Oh, they're great. Yeah. No, that wasn't a shot at the legislature.
Right. Yeah,
I mean, I've been there.
Yeah.
The point is, like, we have to go ask for every dollar that we use to run the State Department of Justice, including for law enforcement. So we don't have a huge law enforcement presence in the state, is what I'm saying.
Yeah.
We very much still rely on local sheriff's offices, and they do a great job. They're great partners. Local police departments. The feds are becoming a bigger and bigger ally. I don't often say that, but on the law enforcement side, FBI is great. Border Patrol is fantastic. We have a huge Border Patrol contingent in Montana, and they're very, very helpful. The U.S. Marshals, you know, we had that manhunt in Anaconda a couple months ago.
Right.
Well, the U.S. Marshals Service showed up, and they were fantastic. I mean, that's what they do for a living. They hunt fugitives.
There was no jurisdictional arguing over there either on that case.
It was great.
Yeah.
I mean, and wrap your head around that. We had 40 different law enforcement agencies that showed up. That could have easily devolved into, you know, who's urinating and who's sandbox.
Right. Yeah.
And we just didn't get there. It was great. Great cooperation from everybody. State, local, feds. It was fantastic.
Talking Point USA on the program on Monday. We're going to be talking with Dale Moore, who does our outdoor program, a little hunting program on Tuesday. Wednesday, the governor's going to call in. And then Thursday, in studio, another fine crime fighter in Montana, Corey Swanson, Montana's Chief Justice of the Supreme Court. And he'll be in, and a lot of fun things to talk about with him. You probably know Corey a little bit, don't you, Austin?
I do. Yeah. Corey's a former county attorney. We were colleagues. He was the Broadwater County attorney. We are so fortunate to have him on the court because we didn't have anybody on the Montana Supreme Court prior to his election who really knew anything about criminal law. That's kind of important. And Corey literally was one of our best prosecutors in the entire state. Like this is the guy that prosecuted the Barris case, those awful individuals who came into Broadwater County and murdered a sheriff deputy.
Yeah.
I mean, that was also the State Department of Justice, but Corey Swanson, the county attorney at the time, they pounded that guy.
Yeah. Good call on you, Montana, for putting Chief Justice Corey Swanson in place there. And the same for Austin. I appreciate you. Still got a lot of your term left to do. I don't really have enough time to talk about illegal immigration. We got about a minute left here. Just what's the word on it? I mean, because I think people are concerned about how are we cooperating? What is our role as a county or law enforcement?
Yeah, well, so I'll be real quick.
Sorry.
Prior to President Trump, the state had no touch on illegal immigration. We would often encounter them. We were required to turn them over to ICE. Under the Biden administration, they were literally turning these people loose. Just turning them loose. That's no longer the case. The bad news here in Montana is that we've only got about 5 or 6 ICE agents for the entire state. The good news, we are cooperating with them right hand in hand. Right? We are literally in the process of deputizing every Montana Highway Patrol trooper to enforce federal immigration law. That's legal. Under federal law, they can do it. We've signed the agreement. It's just a matter of checking a few boxes and getting it done.
Thank you for that. I'm glad I asked because that's a significant development there.
Absolutely. Huge.
What are you doing for fun? Catching a game here and there?
Gonna head to the mountains here pretty soon. My trigger finger's getting itchy. Gonna go chase some wapiti.
Well, good luck.
Yeah.
Have fun. Thanks for coming in, too. Appreciate
glad
it. Thanks
to
for
it.
What you do, Austin. Appreciate it.
It's the job. Thanks, Tom.
Thanks for joining us for the podcast. And join us weekdays live from 9 a.m. to 10 a.m. for more Voices of Montana on great radio stations all across our Treasure State.